Good morning. Special to be here with you. I remember those days without air conditioning. We didn't have air conditioning in our church either over there in the old sanctuary for quite a few years, really. Does anyone know when it got put in? Harold, you probably remember. Anyway, and I remember when the fans got put in. So that was an improvement too. So this is a similar story to John's, but I spent a fair bit of time watching those fans and seeing if I could track, you know, get my eyes to track a fan blade. That was one way to pass the time in a church service. All right, so this morning I want us to look at a passage in Ephesians chapter 3 to start with, and then a passage in Ephesians 4, and then we'll talk about a passage that's in between. So you can start turning to Ephesians chapter 3. And we'll look at this prayer of Paul's that is kind of typical Paul writing, a little wordy and a little complicated, but I think we can get the general gist of it. Ephesians 3, verse 14. For this reason, I bow my knees to the Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, from whom the whole family in heaven and earth is named, that he would grant you, according to the riches of his glory, to be strengthened with might through his Spirit in the inner man, that Christ may dwell in your hearts through faith, that you, being rooted and grounded in love, may be able to comprehend with all the saints what is the width and length and depth and height, to know the love of Christ which passes knowledge, that you may be filled with all the fullness of God. And that last phrase, I want us to think about, just notice, he talks about this concept of the fullness of God, being filled with the fullness of God. That's a goal there. That's a vision for that church in Ephesus. Now, and I would just call that spiritual maturity. Now, if we jump over to chapter 4, which is the chapter that talks about the gifts Jesus has given to the church, different roles, different gifts, and start at verse 11. And he himself gave some to be apostles, some prophets, some evangelists, and some pastors and teachers for the equipping of the saints, for the work of ministry, for the edifying of the body of Christ, till we all come to the unity of the faith and of the knowledge of the Son of God, to a perfect man, to the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ. So you see that word again, there's the idea of fullness. There's a fullness that a church can apparently get to. And it is God's intention for a church to experience a spiritual fullness in knowledge, in love, in faith, and in Christ-likeness. So I think this is a vision that is appropriate to have for a church, and I think a church can get there. And a lot of things go into making this happen, growing up into this fullness. Part of it is prayer. That's really important. And prayers like Paul's need to be happening. I don't know that often my prayers look like the kind of prayer we see in Ephesians 3. I think I tend to be more specific maybe, but these general kind of prayer for spiritual maturity and growth, there's definitely a place for them. They need to be going up. So prayer is important. The work of the Spirit is important. The work of the saints and their different gifts being put to work is important. But also, between chapter 3 and chapter 4, there are some other really critical elements that need to be in place for growth to happen, for progress to happen. And we'll look at those in a minute. But first, I want to describe to you a made-up church. And this is not based on any church I know, I promise. This is completely fictional, and it's in the town of Thudville. This is Thudville Mennonite Church. It has a lot of talented Christians in this church. They're people who are good at organizing, good at planning, good at teaching, good at singing. They have a good mixture of old people, young people, old families, younger families. After service, There are older people with some canes and walkers and some little children running around and yelling and young parents trying to keep them under control. All signs of a nice mixture. They have a solid group, a solid grip on the truth. They have a well thought out doctrinal statement and a pretty good set of applications that they pretty much agree on. They have a good school. Teachers are experienced and creative. Students usually do pretty well. They have good offerings. They have decent church attendance. They have a good work ethic. They're not a lazy church. They're involved in different ministries. But most importantly, they are Christians, and they do want to become more like Jesus. So this is all good and how it should be, or how we would like it to be. But if I was trying to sell this church to you, in quotes, would you buy into it? Would you be ready to sign up for a church like this and join it? Or would you have more questions? And I think for a lot of us who have been around a little while and seen church life a little while, we would probably have a few more questions. Because sometimes what isn't mentioned on a resume or in a sales pitch is the part that should really be picking up on and paying attention to. What is not mentioned? For example, if I was trying to sell you my van and I said, I'll give you a really good deal on this van. It runs, it drives, it's passed inspection last time, and it's definitely usable. One of the questions you would want to have answered is, well, how many miles, what kind of mileage does it have on it? And then when I gave you that answer, you would probably turn around and walk away. There are some important things about this church at Thudville, the made-up church, that haven't been mentioned. And if all you can say about a church is they're really talented, they've got a lot of resources, the basics are there, there's some cause for concern. Does this church have what it takes to grow up into the fullness of Christ? So now let's start in Ephesians 4, at the beginning of Ephesians 4, a few verses here, that I think name the elements that need to be in place for growth to happen in a church, for things to work the way they ought to. And this comes right after Paul's prayer in Ephesians 3, and I think it connects to that prayer, to the vision Paul has in that prayer. So in Ephesians 4, verse 1, I therefore, the prisoner of the Lord, beseech you to walk worthy of the calling with which you were called, with all lowliness and gentleness, with long-suffering, bearing with one another in love, endeavoring to keep the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. There is one body and one Spirit, just as you were called, in one hope of your calling, one Lord, one faith, one baptism, one God and Father of all, who is above all, and through all, and in you all. This sermon is mainly about verses 2 and 3. And what I would say about the church at Thudville is that if they don't have lowliness and gentleness and long-suffering that bears with one another in love, they're actually in bad shape. And that can be said for any church. It could be said for our church. And the sermon this morning is not because I think that we're in bad shape and really struggling in these areas. It's more because I think they are critical and we should review them and think about them for ourselves, not really for others. How are we doing in these areas and how we relate to each other and view ourselves? So what I'm going to do is the rest of the time, we're going to pretty much go through each of these one at a time, talk about lowliness, talk about gentleness, talk about long-suffering, what these words mean, and try to think about what this looks like in the context of church life. So starting with lowliness, this is a word that is, the word that's translated lowliness is actually the combination of two words. The one word is humble, and the other word is thinking. So it means humble thinking. So it has a lot to do with how we think about ourselves and how we think about others too. Paul only uses this word a few times, once in Colossians 3, which is kind of a parallel passage to this one. He says a lot of the same things, and he says we need to put on things like kindness and humility and meekness. And that humility word is the same word as lowliness. Paul also mentions it in Colossians 2. He uses this word twice in Colossians 2, but in a negative way, where he's talking about a false kind of humility that is a fraud, that is a kind of an external act to make people really admire your humility. It made me think of David Copperfield, for those of you who've read David Copperfield, and Uriah Heep, and how he would was famous for saying that he would say, "I'm a very humble person." And he acted very humble, but he was also he was a terrible person. He was scheming and subtle and watchful, as Agnes would say about him. So that is not true humility. True humility is not scheming. It's not subtle. But pride is subtle, and it can sneak up on us and sneak into our thoughts, and we need to guard against it. The last time that Paul uses this word is in Philippians 2, verse 3. And you know this verse. It's the one that says, "Let nothing be done through selfish ambition or conceit, but in lowliness of mind, let each esteem others better than himself." So I want to give you an example now of what this can look like in church life, and I'm going to try to use Thudville as an example. What it can look like when lowliness is missing. So I'll try to tell a story, just kind of bear with me here. Thudville Mennonite Church is having its quarterly members meeting, and the agenda is outreach opportunities. How can we share the love of Jesus with the world? Henry Holler has been secretly preparing for weeks. He's been doing a lot of research and planning, and he's excited for when he gets to reveal what he thinks will be a home run for Jesus. Pastor Eric opens up the discussion that evening and says, "Who has an idea for what we might do what more can we do to show the love of Jesus to the world and be an outreach?" Henry stands up and starts talking and passing out a handout. He says, "Guys, I have an exciting opportunity to share with you. A soup kitchen in Wrightsville. We can meet on Friday evenings. We can rent the old Golden Corral on 5th Street. We can reach a bunch of poor people that don't get enough to eat. I've already run it past my contact in the health department, and I happen to personally know the owner of the property, and he's willing to rent it to us at minimal cost. This handout that I'm giving you has a nice breakdown of what it'll cost and how many people we'll reach. Guys, I am so excited about this. We can feed a lot of people, spread the good news of the love of Jesus. And here's the thing. This ministry can start as soon as next week. All I need is a few ready and willing people to help serve food." And with that, he sits down. For a minute, people turn over their handouts and say nothing. Finally, Jim pipes up. "So, Henry, I do have a concern. Wrightsville is 45 minutes away, and that's quite a distance." And Henry interrupts. "Nobody needs to be scared of a little driving. It won't kill us. It's no farther away than Lake Cary, and I've noticed that doesn't seem to be a problem for some of us." Everyone knows who Henry is talking about. Jim has a boat at the Lake Cary Marina. Those who follow him on Facebook knows he travels to the lake fairly often. Jim flushes with embarrassment. Pastor Eric tries to help out. "Jim, did you finish?" "Well, I was going to say that it would be nice if the community we're reaching was a little closer to home. It would actually be nice to be able to feel like we're building some connections and people that might actually come to our church here in Thudville. Another brother raises his hand. You know, a soup kitchen could be a good thing, and I appreciate all the work Henry's put into this, but I like the idea of something closer to home too, like a kids club or something. A couple other people nod their heads. Henry holds both hands up. Everyone needs to slow down and think carefully about this, because what I'm offering is a real, ready to execute project. People will come to this. I already talked to a homeless man named Tony, and he's desperate to hear about Jesus and eat pizza. I already have the menu figured out. It'll work, and the location is perfect, and a little time on the road isn't going to hurt anybody. Jesus spent hours on the road. Well, after some more talk, they decided to come back to this question later. After the service, Pastor Eric found a chance to have a word with Henry alone. Henry, I feel like you were a little rough in how you talked to Jim and the way you brought up Lake Cary and that kind of thing. I think that was embarrassing to him. Henry said, well, maybe so, but you don't know the whole story. Jim's carried a grudge against me ever since I was chosen to be a lay preacher and he wasn't. So every time I have an idea, he just wants to see it fail. And the rest of those guys, I don't know what's wrong with them. I don't understand why travel time is such a big deal to them. Okay, so that's the end of my parable. So let's think about what it looks like when loneliness is missing and some of the trouble that can just come out of it. For one thing is service becomes easily contaminated when loneliness is missing. Henry had a plan that was dear to him. He had a vision. And deep down, I don't know if he would recognize this, but the vision was really Henry's soup kitchen. And he's been hearing voices in his head, voices that say things like, this soup kitchen, it would have never happened without Henry. Henry, I'm just so thankful you had a vision for this. Henry, God has really used you to bless a lot of people. And I think we kind of know what it can feel like to have those voices in your head. I've had them before. When humility is missing, service gets contaminated with selfishness. And I'm afraid that's what happened here. When loneliness is missing, we get rough with people. Also, Henry had a vision. And when it got threatened, he felt threatened. And he sort of attacked other people's ideas and even reputation. When loneliness is missing, we don't listen well. It's hard to see when people make points, and we tend to make their points look a little dumb, like who's scared of a little drive time wasn't really the concern, was it? But Henry kind of turned it into they just don't want to spend time on the road and made their concern look kind of dumb or weak or unspiritual. When loneliness is missing, it's also hard for us to grow. And when Pastor Eric talked to Henry. Henry couldn't accept that he had messed up. And that's too bad because Henry had messed up. And he needed to see that. And he cut himself out of an important opportunity. It would have been in his best interest to get a hold of that. When it comes to doing better, humility is your best friend. But when loneliness is missing, there's not a lot of hope. Proverbs 26:12 says, do you see someone wise in his own eyes? There's more hope for a fool than for him. So if there are a lot of people like Henry in the church of Thudville, it's in trouble, and they should be concerned. And we should be concerned about this kind of thing, too. We should embrace humility, realize we can be wrong in our thinking. There are other ideas out there that might be better than ours, and we shouldn't get too bought in to our own ideas. We should be focused on kingdom advancement and not self-advancement. I was thinking about reorganization and how people are going to be switching roles and people will be taking your place maybe in some role or another. And if you are glad, if the person who takes your place does better than you and you're glad about that, that is a really healthy sign. Okay, now let's talk about gentleness. This is the word that's translated meekness in the King James Version. And definitions of it usually involve the word restraint or being measured in how we respond to people or handle situations. Gentleness is a pretty good word. I'll use it here. Stick with it. Paul uses this word about 10 times in his writings. He names it as a fruit of the Spirit. In Colossians, he lists it as a virtue to put on. He often uses it in connection with correction or discipleship. So in 2 Corinthians 10:1, he says, "Now I, Paul, myself, am pleading with you by the meekness and gentleness of Christ, who in presence am lowly among you, but being absent am bold toward you." So he's pleading to them. He's trying to get them to accept some correction, and he's pleading in a spirit of gentleness. And then, of course, you know the verse in Galatians that says, if a man's overtaken in a trespass, you who are spiritual, restore him in a spirit of gentleness. It's the same word again. And then 2 Corinthians, a servant of the Lord must not quarrel, but be gentle to all. That's in relating to opposition again. And finally, this is one from 1 Corinthians 4:21. This one makes things just a little complicated or nuanced, but we'll talk about it. Paul says, "What do you want?" 1 Corinthians 4:21. "Shall I come to you with a rod or in love and a spirit of gentleness?" And so what he's saying there is, if you don't, he's asking them to respond to his correction in writing, and he is reaching to them in a spirit of gentleness. But he's saying, if you don't respond to this, I'm going to have to come to you with sterner measures. He's going to have to escalate. And so that's just the nuance to keep in mind here, is that when there isn't a response, there is an appropriate level of escalation. But there still needs to be that spirit of restraint and being measured about how we do things, not losing control and not beating people up. Okay, I want to go back to Thudville for a minute. I gave you a mild version of Pastor Eric correcting Henry, but let's go back and erase that from the story and change it out with a wild version of Pastor Eric. We were playing Uno Flip Uno last night, and it has a mild side and a wild side, so that's why I said that. Okay, so this is Pastor Eric being a little more fierce. He calls Henry on the way home and chews him out. And he says, "Henry, you behaved very badly this evening. I'm very upset with you. You obviously ran way ahead of everyone else with your idea. We were there looking for suggestions. You came with a project that was basically completed, and we were just supposed to sign on to it. You were trying to impress people with your organizational skills and connections. You dismissed concerns. You hurt Jim's reputation. I think you're selfish and proud, and you have a bad haircut." What's wrong with this version of Eric? I mean, a lot of the things he said were true, probably were true, but it's too harsh, and he makes assumptions that he doesn't really know. Even if they're true, he doesn't really know, and he's assuming the worst. He doesn't give Henry a chance to explain any of the background or the history or how he got to this place. So that, in my mind, is an example of harshness. It's not appropriate. Jesus said in Matthew 11, "Take my yoke on you and learn from me, because I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls." And that word gentle is the word that we're talking about here. Was Jesus hard on his disciples? Sometimes it feels like he kind of was. He was a bit stern with them sometimes. When they were weak in their faith, he scolded them at least once I can think of, maybe a couple times. He was kind of hard on Peter when Peter stood in opposition to his direction to the cross, toward the cross. Thinking of another time. Oh, he was pretty upset about the disciples keeping the children away. He uses a word there that means pretty indignant, pretty upset about them not letting the children come to him. I don't know if there are other examples of not in how he related to his disciples, but in general, I see a lot of restraint. And at times when the disciples were having discussions about greatness, where Jesus does not tear into them, does not scold them or berate them. He teaches them. He's quite measured in how he handles those. James and John coming asking for special seats of honor. He does not scold them about that. It's remarkable. Doubting Thomas does not get a scolding. And Peter's denying Peter does not get a scolding. So I'm impressed by his pattern of gentleness. So we should apply the same kind of measured approach when it comes to church life and how we disciple each other. A healthy, growing church does have correction and discipleship. We need that. But the admonition needs to be careful and restrained, not being harder on people than we need to be, saying what needs to be said as gently as can be said, and not more than what is necessary. We don't need to pound them into agreeing with all five of our concerns, or make them feel so terrible that they'll never do it again, or assign motives that we don't know about. 1 Timothy 5 says, verse 1, it says, do not rebuke, and the word is a harsh kind of rebuke. So some translations would say, do not harshly rebuke an older man, but exhort him as a father. And then Paul basically carries on the same approach to all parts of the church body. He says, younger men as brothers. So still talking about how to disciple them. Older women as mothers, younger women as sisters with all purity. So we need gentleness in our churches. We also need long-suffering. This is a word that is often translated patience. Paul uses this word in a number of places. Again, it's a fruit of the Spirit in Galatians. And again, in Colossians, it is a Christ-like virtue to put on. And it is interesting to me, I'm sure I know this has been noticed before, but that you can have one of these things that is referred to as a fruit of the Spirit, and also is talked about as something we need to put on. That's just interesting. A verse that uses the word long-suffering that I want us to think about, and it especially caught my eye because Paul uses it in connection with Jesus, who is our ultimate role model. This is in 1 Timothy 5:15. This is a faithful saying and worthy of all acceptance, that Christ Jesus came into the world to save sinners, of whom I am chief. However, for this reason, I obtained mercy, that in me first Jesus Christ might show all long-suffering. That's our word. That Jesus might show all long-suffering as a pattern to those who are going to believe on him for everlasting life. Now, Paul persecuted Jesus. Jesus showed long-suffering toward Paul. Why? Because that's the nature of Jesus, but also because Jesus saw potential in Paul and saw what he was going to do with him. And Jesus sees potential in us also and is long-suffering toward us. Question is, do we have that kind of long-suffering for people around us who are struggling or who rub us the wrong way or we don't think are treating us well? And this is not just any flavor of long-suffering. This is a long-suffering with a certain quality. You see, Paul goes on to say bearing with one another in love. So this is a loving kind of long-suffering and not the cheaper kind of long-suffering that is resentful. There's resentful long-suffering. It's easy to get there, but what about loving long-suffering? I've experienced the resentful kind. I've experienced it at work. You know, it's where you're putting up with someone. You're not getting into fights because you're not the kind of person. You don't fight people, but we are annoyed by that person. We're kind of against them, and we secretly smile to ourselves when their things break. It kind of makes us happy, and we don't enjoy their success. We kind of wish they would go away. This is long-suffering resentment. It's not the kind of long-suffering Paul's talking about, and the church doesn't do well with that kind of long-suffering. So we need loving long-suffering, and here's an example from Thudville of what it could look like when long-suffering is absent. Our example could be how Jim handles his frustration with Henry. Okay, so Henry was the guy who had the big idea, and he's the one who brought up late Carrie in a pointed kind of way that embarrassed Jim. So Jim, instead of talking to Henry, calls his best friend Thomas and complains to Thomas about Henry and Eric, by the way, Pastor Eric. Did you hear what Henry said about me? Henry, I've got to say, he is just a jerk sometimes. And you know what makes me the most upset is that nobody said anything. He just got away with it. Eric didn't say anything. Eric just lets Henry do whatever he wants. He puts up with bad behavior. I'm about as upset with Eric as I am with Henry. So this is not loving long-suffering. I can understand why Jim would be mad. I'm not blaming him for that. But this is not a loving kind of reaction. And so the easy thing for Thomas to do, because he is a good friend and he wants to be a good friend. Sometimes we can very easily not be good friends when we want to be loyal to somebody. And this is what Thomas does. He agrees and says, you're right. Our church, man, is just struggling lately. And people aren't looking out for each other. And nobody noticed me when I had my hand raised tonight. I had an idea. Nobody even noticed or said anything. Now, I might as well have not even come to the members' meeting. And last week, Eric forgot my birthday. That is not loving long-suffering. And Thudville is in trouble, no matter how talented it is, if it doesn't have this kind of long-suffering. What does it look like when a church has loving long-suffering? Well, it's loving. It's not resentful. We appreciate and value people even when they're difficult. We don't run them down. We don't wish they'd go away. It's also long. It's still there when things are difficult. And you know, maybe it's easy to love your church when they've, the list of things we do for each other, you know, when they brought you meals or cleaned your house or helped you out through some hard times, and those are good things and they should happen. And when they've happened to me, you just feel such a deep appreciation and love for your church and these people. Man, they're wonderful. But what about the times when you feel a little overlooked or underappreciated, and that can be tough. That can be something we struggle with. I understand that, but we also need to apply loving long-suffering in those situations and realize these are still sweet people. Maybe if I feel a little overlooked or they missed something, that it doesn't mean they're bad people or they're just humans. And so let's be loving and long-suffering when those kinds of things happen. Be patient and merciful with people. And don't assume the worst. So those are the three virtues I think are really important for church life. And they tend to go together. I think they tend to go together. Probably if you're strong in the area of long-suffering, you're probably doing well in the areas of gentleness and lowliness. And if you're strong in the area of humility, you're probably strong in the area of gentleness and long-suffering, and so on. I will kind of quickly comment on verse 3, the rest of verse 3, that talks about endeavoring to keep the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. And I'm not going to say too much about it, except that I think there definitely, Paul intended there for us to see a connection between these three elements, long-suffering, gentleness, and lowliness, and this endeavor to keep the unity of the Spirit of the bond of peace. And I believe people who are endeavoring to be lowly and gentle and long-suffering are at the same time, by doing that, are contributing to the peace of the church and protecting it. And the tempting thing would be to say something like this at this point, that if we were more lowly and gentle and long-suffering, we wouldn't have church splits. But I think it's probably more complicated than that. I don't think that's the whole truth. But I think there would definitely be less trouble if we were better in these areas, if our churches were stronger in these three areas. And my encouragement for us is, in difficult church situations, we need to continue to apply these three things, lowliness, gentleness, long-suffering, apply them to the situation, bring them to the situation repeatedly, kind of like a mechanic gently working with a rusty bolt that he doesn't want to shear off. You know, heat and JB Weld, and then maybe he'll try again, and maybe he'll give it some time, and maybe he'll try again. Is that the right approach? You mechanics can tell me. What? WD-40? All right. That's important too. And just bring these elements to whatever tough situations you are in. And maybe you won't keep from making mistakes, but you probably will avoid the worst kind of mistakes in difficult situations. So in conclusion, God wants churches to come to this place of fullness in Him, growing up, becoming more like Him, becoming full of Him. How do we get there? We get there through prayer, through responding to His Spirit at work in us, by His people using their gifts, but also by paying attention to these three elements, lowliness, gentleness, and loving long-suffering. And, of course, the best example of this is Jesus. He is our ultimate role model. As we admire Him and look to Him, I think that we will be more inspired. It'll be easier for these things to come out in our own lives. God bless you.